For whatever reason, your mother thought it was a good idea to hook up with a Podrig. It's not common, but she wouldn't be the first idiot to cross species lines. She smirked at Cormac, suddenly back to her usual snarky self, and continued. I assume he didn't know what she was. That's usually the case. Fortunately for him, she didn't deplete him right away. She must have liked him because she did it slowly, over time. Long enough for you to be born, and then for... 4 years to pass, Megan supplied. Right, Brenna said. That's when he left the picture, voluntarily, I think, because my source couldn't find any death certificate. What happened to Megan's mom? Cormac asked. Again, best guess. Having fed herself for years on just one man, she'd become an addict. When he cut off her supply, she began to deteriorate physically. The county's concerns weren't too far off. Cormac nodded, and Megan had a flash memory of her mother looking much too thin. She wouldn't show up for the UAs. Because she wouldn't comply with a court order, the county placed you... with my aunt and uncle, Megan said. Which brings us to the point of all of this. Brenna squared her shoulders and looked at Megan straight on, narrowing her eyes. Cormac got visibly tense, and he shifted his folding chair closer to Megan. Did you know your aunt and uncle well before moving in with them? Brenna asked. No. Then why do you think they were related to you? Because they told me they were? Shit, had it all been a lie? Was her entire fucking life a lie? I don't know how they did it, Brenna said, because these child protection cases aren't accessible to the public, but I think they were following your mother. They applied for adoption, claiming to be relatives. Her mother wasn't there to say otherwise, because by then she was dead. Brenna breathed out as if she had more bad news. I don't want to sugarcoat this. Brenna, Cormac warned. I don't believe your mother died of drugs. Or even of withdrawal from your old man. Your aunt and uncle, the people who said they were your aunt and uncle, they're members of the Black Castle. Megan sucked in a breath. It was something she had already come to understand, but hearing it said so bluntly was shocking. That picture by their door, the same one Riley had in the office. She wished she could rip the image off her back. They killed her mom? Cormac asked. Brenna nodded solemnly. Or one of their associates did. My question to you, she said, turning to Megan with suddenly narrowed eyes, all sympathy gone, is which one of your halves is dominant, and did they induct you into their sick assembly? Megan just killed the one I've been tracking, Cormac said, his voice low, angry, and defensive. What? She asked, her head whipping from Cormac to Megan, then back again. I got myself trapped. Cormac explained, leaning in against the table. Another wave of nausea hit Megan's stomach as she remembered seeing him chained to the chair. It wasn't natural for such a large, muscular man to be laid powerless so easily, merely by a little salt, a little iron. How? Brenna asked, sounding incredulous. Megan's stomach twisted even tighter as Cormac's story unfolded, particularly when he described the events she'd not been there for. She thought she'd lose it when he described the knife at her own throat, the trickle of blood. God, she hadn't known she'd been cut. Her hand raised involuntarily to her throat. Then Megan tilted, popped up by the fireplace, grabbed the poker and swung. He dropped like a stone. How do you know it was the same one you were hunting? Brenna asked. I got a rash as soon as I got close to him, Megan said. And then her eyes went wide and she slapped her hand to her forehead. The incense! He was burning incense in the rental office. The smoke must have been in his hair, his clothes. That's what I'm allergic to. It made sense. Just like she told the doctor, the last time she'd been infected was Christmas Eve mass with her fucking aunt and uncle. The church had been thick with incense. That's possible, Brenna said. Are you sure he's dead?
No doubt, Cormac said grimly.
They'll find out, Brenna said. They'll know you've struck back, and they'll send more to the North Shore. Then her face went ashen. They'll target the Cushi. We'll be ready this time, he said, sounding resolved. Cormac, you have to go home, Brenna said, clutching his arm.
"You'd like that, wouldn't you?" he said, and his tone was so thick with sarcasm that Megan got the strong impression they'd had an argument about this before. "You need a safe place where you can lie low for a while." Cormac's face took on a look of pure incredulity. "You really want to call my home a safe place? My parents..." "Cormac," Branna pleaded, "give me one good reason why you shouldn't go home."
"I'll give you two," he growled.
"For one, if the tables are going to turn and I'm the one being tracked, the last place I want to lead them to is my home. Another reason, if they send more, it's just more opportunity to settle the score. I'm not running from that opportunity."
"I think it's important you go home now," Branna said, her voice going uncharacteristically soft. Megan watched as the blood drained from Cormac's face and his mouth went grim.
"Why?"
he asked. "What aren't you telling me?"
"Nothing," Branna said. "It's just that..."
"Cormac, I insist." "You insist," he repeated.
The cynicism was so thick, Megan felt sure if she could throw it, it would stick to the walls. But that didn't mean Branna was wrong. Megan didn't like ganging up on Cormac, especially with Branna, whom she still wasn't too sure about. But she wouldn't mind finding a private place to at least process the last couple hours. She felt so bombarded she might explode.
"Maybe she's right," Megan said, and both Cormac's and Branna's heads swung toward her.
"There are already more of them in the area. At least I think so. You saw my sketchpad, Cormac. I saw Riley in a diner the same day I ran into you. He wasn't alone. He was with a group of people, and they were close. I get that you'd like the opportunity to go after them, but I could really use a quiet place to get my head on straight. It's not like we can go back to the cottage." Cormac stared at her for a long second, as if he was making a mental pros and cons list.
"I haven't been back to my house in a very long time."
"Then maybe it's about time you go," she said. "I know it must be hard to think about, and I realize it won't bring your family back, but it's still your home. You're lucky to have it."
Cormac shifted his weight, and she could feel the tension rolling off him. She needed something to break it, which was why she blurted out,
"Besides, after being away, the dust bunnies have to be terrible."
Branna folded her arms.
"Nothing against bunnies,"
Megan added quickly.
"Oh, for God's sake," Branna muttered.
"All right,"
Cormac said, as if he hadn't heard any of that last part.
"If you're sure."
"Unbelievable," Branna muttered. "I suggest it, and it's idiocy. She suggests it, and it's sheer wisdom."
Cormac sent Branna a look that would have straightened Megan's hair.
"What can I say?"
he asked. "A Kushi never denies his Anamkara." Megan's chest squeezed at the word, still unable to grasp it. She was a halfling, the fated mate to a Kushi.
Branna's head jerked back in surprise.
"You have got to be kidding me."
Cormac exhaled a short burst of air through his nose that both confirmed and expressed his own surprise at the situation.
"Damn it, Cormac," Branna said, still sounding annoyed. "I knew there was something going on with you. Why didn't you tell me yesterday?"
Megan let her attention slide to other things, like who she was, who her mother was, and why her father really left. Was she the same lonely girl she'd been last week? Had she ever been? Did she really know herself at all? She didn't know what it all meant, or where tomorrow would find her. But even if she ended up dead by the end of the month, she knew her time with Cormac would be worth it. And if she could have a hand in bringing him home, giving that back to him after all he'd lost, she hoped he'd think she was worth it too.
Chapter 18. Cormac. It was late. The sky was dark, but the moon was bright and looking larger than normal. Cormac stood just inside the gate on the stone walkway in front of his childhood home, with his mate by his side. A mate he still had not mated, as the hound perpetually reminded him. What would his father have thought of that? He couldn't think about that now. He had vowed half a century ago never to return until he had avenged his family. A head for a head. And though the most imminent threat had fallen, he could not claim the kill as his own. How could he break his vow, go inside when it had not yet been fulfilled? His hands balled into fists. I shouldn't have come. This was a mistake. If that's true, Megan said, her face lifted in awe toward the turret. It's a very large mistake now, isn't it? He turns to her in surprise. You're able to see it. She looked up at him in confusion. Is there some reason why I shouldn't? Apparently not. The house's exterior was charmed to make it invisible to Podricks, but apparently it didn't work on halflings. Though it hurt to look, Cormac tried to see the large three-storied Victorian manor as Megan did, that being for the first time. Its facade was local red sandstone and its other three sides built of brick. The roof was green slate and the numerous multi-shaped windows reflected the moonlight. The porch ran across the entire front of the house, then wrapped around the side, and its ceiling created a second-story porch with a wrought iron balustrade. The last time he'd been on it, he had played marbles with his youngest brother, Madigan. Cormac gave her a descriptive tour from the front yard. A library and four large bedrooms upstairs, each with their own baths. As you enter the front door, there's a sitting room to the right, my mum's music room to the left. Then the hallway and staircase straight ahead. The hall leads to the dining room and... the kitchen. The kitchen. Grief clenched his heart as the memory of his parents' slaughter weakened his knees. A raindrop hit him on the cheek, then another on his hand. Are we going in? Megan asked. Or were you being serious before? A few more drops pelted his face in rapid succession, so he exhaled in surrender and took her hand. Together they strode up the porch steps. He took a key from his pocket and silently opened the front door. It was dark inside, and he caught his shoulder on a coat hook that hadn't been there before, but otherwise he didn't need the lights to know his way through the foyer, past the sitting room on the right. Muscle memory took him to the top of the stairs. At the top, the hallway ran both left and right. He turned right down the shorter hallway, then led to his old bedroom and pushed open the door. Only then did he flip on a light. He pulled Megan inside and closed the door gently behind them. Megan gasped. He wasn't sure why, maybe at the size, and then she began to explore the room. It was exactly as he'd left it half a century ago, a tomb of his past like so many other rooms in the house. On the far side, the queen-sized canopy bed faced the fireplace, which was on the same wall as the door. To his left was the large wardrobe where he used to store not clothes, but all his treasures as a kid. On the wall to his right were two front-facing windows with diamond-patterned muntins. Thick woven rugs covered the hardwood floor. It felt odd having Megan in his space. Fuck. It was odd for him being in his room. But to watch her explore, the way she touched the faded wallpaper, then the notched mouldings on the fireplace mantel. Or perhaps he had pushed his restraints so far, she could sneeze and it would make him hard. You have a fireplace in your bedroom. There are six fireplaces in the house. One in each bedroom, one in the library, and one in the dining room. Nobody has a fireplace in their bedroom. Megan, that conclusion is a bit odd under the circumstances. Cormac, the circumstances themselves are odd, don't you think? Give me a break on logic for a hot second, okay? Okay. She stood in front of the fireplace and took one of the framed photographs from the mantel. He knew what it was without moving closer. A black and white print, crinkled from being carried around in a wallet before finally being placed in its frame. It was of his parents in Victorian clothes and looking at each other lovingly. His mother's black hair hung nearly to her waist. His father cupped her cheek in his hand. This man looks a lot like you, she said. Are they your great-great-grandparents? Is that where your money comes from? Because, judging by this place, I can tell they had money. Railroad baron or something? Nothing like that. My dad was a gambler, and a good one. That's a picture of him. Of both my parents. Conan and Siobhan McConnell. Megan's expression went blank, and he could see her holding her breath. She was obviously pretending very hard not to be affected by that knowledge. You're immortal, she whispered. No, Cormac said. If that were the case, they wouldn't be dead. The Shi age at a normal rate until we hit maturity. Then things plateau. As soon as I was of age, I left home to avenge my family. That was 50 years ago.
I see,
she said, and she took long, steady breaths before asking.
So, how long could you live? If nothing interfered, I mean.
I don't know. Hundreds of years, certainly.
And halflings?
I don't know the answer to that. He watched as she carefully replaced the photo on the mantle, then took down a group shot that was taken in the late 50s. It was of himself and his 3 younger brothers, each of them in tiny wool suits. They all posed smugly, acting like the invincible Ku Shi they already believed themselves to be. Well, maybe not Madigan. He was still a baby.
That's you, isn't it?
She said, pointing him out.
You said you were the oldest, but I could tell even without knowing that. You've got the same intense eyes and the same small scar by the corner of your mouth.
Cormac didn't look at his face in the photo. Rather, he focused on his arms, which were wrapped around Madigan and holding him in his lap. Cormac could still feel him, and it was like a kick to the gut.
When I was a kid, she said, I used to imagine what it would be like to have brothers and sisters, someone to tease and someone to tease you right back. Did you and your brothers have nicknames for each other? Lots of inside jokes, I bet.
Some. She turned toward him, and there were tears in her eyes.
I'm so sorry, she said. I'm so sorry about what happened.
Let's not talk about it.
Maybe it would help if you did.
A muscle spasmed in his jaw. I doubt it.
Have you talked to Branna about it?
Branna?
Yeah. I can't quite figure you two out. I can't quite figure you two out. You're like friends, but also not.
Well, that summed it up nicely. I don't have to talk to Branna about it. She was here for it.
What?
Megan looked dumbfounded. At first, Cormac didn't understand her confusion. But then, thinking back, Branna probably hadn't given any indication of their shared experience. At least, not in Megan's presence. Cormac took a deep breath and dove in. The first time I saw her, she was right there. He jerked his head toward his bedroom window. Waking me, warning me of danger. She told me to get my brothers and hide. So we hid in the cupboard downstairs and listened as the Black Castle invaded our home and cut our parents' throats right where they stood in the kitchen. Megan visibly shivered. The second time I saw Branna was on the lakeshore, 5 years later. There had been a rumor of a herd of Nuklavi coming in from Scotland and moving through the Great Lakes. The Ku Shi, who were 18 years old and older, were called out to guard the shoreline. My brothers were all too young, but Madigan secretly followed me. He stopped to catch his breath, which was getting shallow. Branna warned me that it was a trap. The Black Castle had planted the rumor to call us out. By the time I saw Madigan, his head was rolling across the ground. I did nothing to save him, either. Megan's gaze dipped to Madigan's face in the photograph.
You loved him.
I loved all of them, he said solemnly. Then he inhaled deeply. The next time I saw Branna...
That's enough, she said. I get it.
I don't think you do.
No, you're right, I don't. Not exactly, anyway. I don't know what to think, what to feel. Except, somehow, I feel responsible.
Why would you feel responsible? It all happened before you were even born.
I lived among these people. I could have. I should have.
What? Taken them out with a fireplace poker? Megan's face went ghostly white.
You're making a joke?
Too soon. If she was going to stay with him, she was going to have to get used to gore and violence. They were the only constants in his life.
I don't know. I've seen a lot, Cormac, but nothing like this.
Cormac took her hand and squeezed it. Tell me about the douchebag.
She looked up at him, and her eyebrows drew together.
Who?
The guy who was taking you to Canada. That's what you call him.
What about this conversation would make you suddenly want to know about him?
Because I know he pissed you off and forced you into a bad situation, but so have I. So there's no telling what names you call me behind my back. What I want to know is, did you like him? Do you wish you were with him? And that you'd never got out of his car?
No, I don't wish I was with him.
What kind of question? Then I'll ask it this way. Are you happy to be with me? Or do you regret coming this far?
No, I don't regret it. I won't lie and say I'm not freaked out by the last 3 days, but I am glad to be here with you. You're the only one I want guiding me through everything I have to figure out. I'm glad not to be alone anymore, and I'm glad I can make it so you're not alone anymore either.
You're not alone, Megan. You won't ever be that again.
Really?
She asked.
Is that what you want?
Oh, I want, he said. By Danu, did he want.
Chapter 19. Megan. Megan had more than glimpsed into Cormac's world, and as weird and dangerous as it might be, she wanted more. Actually, insane as it all was, she wanted a whole hell of a lot more. Cormac stalked forward, his eyes locked on hers, and she knew what was coming. The tension between them had been growing for days, and last night had been both tantalizing and terrifying. She didn't want to admit it before. She thought it made her some kind of freak. But the simmering energy of the hellhound lurking behind Cormac's eyes secretly thrilled her. She wondered now if it was because she was a halfling. Then she wondered if Cormac would be able to hold it together this time, because, as much as she liked the hound, its full appearance would shut things down quick. Without another word, Cormac caught the bottom edge of her t-shirt in his fingers and waited for her reaction. Megan raised her arms, then slowly, like he was unwrapping a present, he pulled it up. The cotton tickled over her chest, sending a rush of goosebumps skittering over her breasts. Once it was off, he dropped it to the floor. His eyes swept over her torso, lingering on her breasts as they rose and fell. Her breath quickened in response. Cormac made a tortured noise, and he drew his finger along the top edge of her lacy bra. His touch sent such a riot of energy racing over her shoulders and shooting down her arms that she had to grip his biceps just to stay upright. He reached between them, popped the button on her jeans while keeping his eyes locked on hers. She heard, rather than felt, her zipper go down. And then she was swinging her hips while he pushed her jeans down over her ass. It fell to her ankles, and she stepped out. Cormac took a step back and let his gaze follow the length of her body, slowly rising again, lingering in the most interesting spots, before returning to her face. His eyes were dark, nearly black, and she swore she could hear the hound's contented rumble vibrating through Cormac's own chest. How do I get your clothes off? She asked, if they don't really exist. He closed his eyes, and when he opened them, he was naked. Holy shit. Cormac's hand shot out, wrapping around the back of her neck, and he yanked her against his body. Their mouths met, and his tongue slid in, moving against hers. It was incredible. Better even than before. The taste of him, the hard warmth of him. She was dizzy and hungry, lost in the heat and the muscled grip of him, his smooth skin trembling under her hands as she slid her palms over his ribs. He groaned into her mouth as his kiss deepened, and he ground his hardest part against her until she was crying out with pleasure. Do you want me, Megan? God, wasn't it obvious? She rocked her hips, wishing her bra and panties could disappear as easily as his clothes had vanished.
Something deep in her core was coiling tighter and tighter, ready to unleash. And she wanted more. She needed more. His hand dug into her ass, and his other hand palmed her breast, caressing, thumbing the tip, deepening the painful ache inside her. She tipped her head back, and he kissed down her neck, sucking deep at the spot where it met her shoulder, marking her.
"I asked you a question, Makushla."
"I do. I want you." When he ducked his head and closed his mouth over her nipple, it was an out-of-body experience. "Yes, fuck yes." Her fists gripped his thick hair, holding him to her while his hot mouth moved over her body, exploring, kissing, licking, nipping. She was burning with desire for him, aching and wanting. His hand caressed her breast, and when he grazed the nipple with his thumbnail, the mixture of pleasure and pain made her body jolt. Megan's hand wrapped around his erection and stroked once. He moaned her name, and his fingers dug into her ass while she worked him, feeling him thicken in her hand until she could spread a drop of moisture over the tip of his cock, teasing him with what they both knew was about to happen. They weren't even going to make it to the bed. Cormac guided her gently down onto the floor. She laid back with her knees bent, and when she opened her eyes, she found his focus was on the gusset of her panties, and that his dark eyes had gone molten. He followed her down, and she gasped when his fingers tickled up the inside of her thigh. He slipped one inside her panties, then inside her, and her muscles clamped down around him.
"Nice," he said. "So sweet."
He removed his hand and kissed over the dip of her waist, the angle of her hip, and then the other. Then he kissed below her belly button and worked himself lower until he was kissing her right there over her damp panties. "Mac," she said with a moan. He pulled her panties down her legs, and his warm breath brushed against her most sensitive part, sending a shudder right through her. His tongue fluttered and delved deep inside, taking full possession. He groaned and slid his hands under her ass, lifting her off the floor, pulling her against his mouth. A feral sound emanated from somewhere deep, reminding Megan what lurked inside of him. She didn't care. She was too focused on the pulsing at her temples, in her neck, and at her core.
I'm about to... Cormac.
That's it.
Cormac, I'm going to come.
He paused his activities just long enough to say,
"Do it."
Megan rode the edge of her impending orgasm, feeling everything pull tight, then hold, hold, vibrating in the moment before tumbling over the edge. A tidal wave of pure bliss pulled her under, and she let herself get lost in the overwhelming sensations. When she finally opened her eyes, Cormac was watching the muscular aftershocks of her orgasm contract and relax across her pelvic floor. Only once they subsided did he lower her hips to the floor. Then he rose up and over her like a mountain of muscle, holding his weight in his hands. Megan reached between them and stroked his massive cock. His skin was silky, soft and delicate, sliding over hard and savage. The rest of his body was blazing hot and coated in a sheen of perspiration. She moved her hand up over his length, then down again, sending a tremor over his body. Cormac squeezed his eyes tight and groaned.
"Fuck. Oh, God. The way you touch me. You better stop now. Please stop."
Megan took her hand away. Was something wrong? He answered her question by lowering his body onto hers. Then he stretched her arms over her head and held her wrists to the rug. The tip of his thick shaft nestled in her wetness and his eyes widened. The vein bulged down the center of his forehead and he pressed up on his hands again.
"God, Megan."
His voice sounded tortured.
"I want this,"
She wrapped a leg around his hip, bringing his cock right there, right where she wanted him. I've needed this. Please, Cormac. I can feel your heat, Megan. So damn hot. Are you sure you're not half hellhound? Would that make it better? I can't imagine how. Every bit of me needs to thrust. Do it. A muscle jumped in his jaw. It won't be gentle. I didn't ask you to be. His dark eyes went practically black, and she could see the hound lunging, pulling at his chain. Megan, do it. He let out a growl and, grabbing her leg, flipped her to her belly. In the next move, he yanked up on her hips so she was on her knees, head to the carpet. Cormac! She cried out. He was on his knees between her legs. His fingers dug into her hips as he pulled them back to meet his, and his heavy balls slapped against the top of her thighs. She sucked in a sharp breath as her body stretched over his thick cock. Then they both cried out at their joining. The pressure, it was too much. It was too much and still not enough. It was sublime. And she wanted more. So much more. A groan escaped her lips as he slowly pulled out until only the tip remained. She whimpered at the loss of him, and then, with a grunt, he plunged back in with such force that she cried out again and pressed her ass back to meet him. He reached around in between her legs, working her clit as he slammed into her over and over and over again. The sound of their bodies slapping together turned her on all the more, and the pressure inside her was intense. Was sex ever like this before? Her mind was too gone to remember. She was trembling, building up to another orgasm as Cormac filled her. You're mine, he said, though she wasn't sure if she was meant to hear it. In response, her walls tightened, tightened, tightened around him until, finally, the tension broke and her orgasm ripped through her like lightning, leaving her shuddering and convulsing around his cock. Oh, fuck, he groaned. Oh, Megan. God, she was coming again and it would not stop. Wave after wave of such intense pleasure, it bordered on pain. He pulled her tight against him one last time, as he emptied himself into her, letting loose with a long, animalistic growl. Chapter 20. Megan. Megan woke to the sun, sending diamond patterns across Cormac's bedroom. He still lay beside her, now on the bed. She turned her head and found him flat on his back, bare-chested with the soft sheet pulled down to his waist, revealing a tantalizing arrow of dark hair. He held one palm flat against his chest. His full lips were parted. God, he was beautiful. Everything about him was beautiful, even the scarier parts. She'd never known anyone like him, obviously. And if everything she thought she'd known about herself was wrong, that in reality she was a halfling of unknown nature, abilities, and life expectancy. Well, thank God she had someone like Cormac McConnell to show her the way. He wouldn't pull any punches. He'd be honest, even if the truth hurt. And frankly, after all she'd been through, that was a welcome change. When her stomach growled, she eased herself out of bed, grabbed her nightshirt from her suitcase, and pulled it on. She let her eyes focus on the rest of the room. The sunlight brought out the soft luster of the dark wood and intricate moldings. She'd curled herself so closely to Cormac all night, she hadn't appreciated the massive size of the bed. In fact, everything seemed huge. Even the mahogany wardrobe was as tall as it was wide, and it was wide. There were two doors on either side of the wardrobe. The one, she knew, led to the hall. The other, she hoped, led to a bathroom. That hope was realized. Cormac didn't stir through any of her morning routine, but she crept on tiptoe out of the room, stopping only briefly to glance once more at the photos. She clenched her jaw.
The McConnells had once been a big, loving family. Now Cormac kept himself in a self-imposed exile from his house, renting random rooms, working alone, traveling solo, hunting. The travesty of it made her sinuses burn. It made sense for someone like her to be alone, but someone like Cormac? Someone beautiful and brave? Someone whose life work was to keep his people safe? Should never be alone. It seemed unnatural, and it nearly broke her heart. She retraced her steps from the night before, following the short hallway to the curving staircase. She hadn't been able to see the downstairs rooms the night before because the house had been dark. Now she expected to see all the furniture thick with dust, or perhaps covered in sheets. Neither was true. Instead, everything looked well kept, and she wondered if Cormac had maintained a housekeeper in his absence. At the bottom of the stairs and to her left was a large sitting room with an enormous red leather couch with hundreds of silver rivets, more mid-century than its Victorian surroundings. The couch faced away from the entrance to the room. As she wandered closer to it, she could see the coffee table strewn with newer-looking issues of The New Yorker, The Wall Street Journal, and Rolling Stone. Weirder still was the big-screen TV. Maybe Cormac had kept a live-in housekeeper all this time? It seemed implausible, but then she got a whiff of bacon coming from down the hallway that led to the back of the house. Her stomach growled, and just as she turned to go in search of food, a large hand wrapped tight across her mouth. Megan's body tensed, and the blood in her arms tingled with cold. A man's body was behind her. Someone had broken into the house, and that someone jerked her roughly, both with the hand at her mouth and now with an arm wrapped around her belly. His fingers clenched the thin cotton of her nightshirt. "Who are you? And don't you dare lie!" Megan couldn't exactly answer, so she made a noise of protest and struggled in his grasp. "Do you mean to steal from the house, Podrick? Cut down the cushy in their sleep?" Megan tried to remember how she'd escaped from Riley. She hadn't really thought about it at the time, it just happened. Cormac called it tilting. Maybe she needed to lean into it. She tried to bend forward, but the intruder yanked her body back to his. She slammed her foot down on his with all of her weight, and she bit the meaty edge of his hand. It did nothing. He gave her body another shake. "Give me one reason why I shouldn't snap your neck." "Because she's my mate," Cormac said, his voice suddenly filling the room, and he did not sound pleased. Instantly, the arms around her fell away. Megan staggered a few steps, caught her balance against the back of the couch, and whirled. The intruder was tall, dark, and broad-shouldered, much like Cormac, except his eyes were a piercing ice blue. His dark beard was edged with impeccable precision, and his nose was thick at the bridge, like it had been broken and more than once. He wore dark Levi's and a Henley. Beyond that, he looked like he was seeing a ghost.
"Fuck me," he whispered.
And Megan had a smug thought that the intruder was absolutely right. He was going to be fucked by the time Cormac was done with him.
"By Danu, what the hell is going on?"
asked a third man who came shuffling down the stairs and into the room. He had a shaggy mop of dark auburn hair and a trim beard. He had the same gray eyes as Cormac, but he was thinner, and there was a slight yellow tinge to his skin. Megan's fingertips curled against the leather couch at this sudden turn of events.
"Declan,"
said the man who'd grabbed her.
"Take your pills, you look like shit."
"Bite me," he said as he cleaned his glasses with his unbuttoned shirt tail.
"It's only 7 o'clock. I've got time."
He slipped his glasses onto his face and reared back when he focused on Megan.
"Oh, fuck."
Then he turned his head to the side and spotted Cormac standing with his arms crossed in obvious displeasure.
"Oh, fuck,"
he said again, though this time louder.
"Megan,"
Cormac said as he reached for her. Cautiously, she sidestepped until she was close enough for him to take her hand and draw her into his side.
"This is Declan,"
he said, pointing to the one in the glasses. "And Aiden," he said with even more annoyance as he indicated the man who'd grabbed her.
"My brothers."
"Brothers?"
"Aiden," Declan asked. "Am I tripping again, or is that..."
"When did you get here?" Aiden asked, ignoring his brother's question. A little notice might have been nice.
Last night, Cormac said. It was late and spontaneous.
Holy shit, Declan murmured, apparently deciding for himself that he wasn't tripping.
This is Megan Walsh, Cormac said, formally. My Anamkara.
Both brothers reared back while Megan swallowed nervously at how easily Cormac said the word. Then she went back to her earlier thought.
Brothers?
Cormac told her his family had been wiped out. He told her he had no one, that he was alone. It had been the only thing they had in common, and he'd lied? Worse, how could he leave something as precious as his family, and for 50 fucking years? She would give anything to have had what he had, and he threw it away? Fuck, he wouldn't even be here now if she and Branna hadn't insisted he return.
She's a Podrick, Aiden said, stating the obvious.
Halfling, Cormac corrected.
Brothers? Megan asked, finally giving voice to her question.
Aye, Cormac said, without looking at her. He was still in an eye-lock showdown with Aiden.
Your brothers are alive? Now she was yelling, and all three of them jerked to look at her with expressions of confusion.
Megan, cool it, Cormac muttered. And that's when she totally lost it.
You are such an idiot!
She put both palms flat against his chest and shoved with all her strength. He didn't move. He didn't even flinch. And that irritated her even more.
Ah!
She cried out in desperation and raced upstairs to... Well, she didn't know what she was going to do, but she wasn't going to do it with an audience. Jesus, when it came to men, she really could pick 'em, couldn't she? She'd had moochers, losers, and douchebags, but big, dumb, and stupid was in a league all its own.
Chapter 21. Cormac. Cormac's bedroom door slammed so hard the pictures on the walls downstairs jumped on their nails. All three brothers looked up at the ceiling. Trouble in paradise? Declan asked with a smirk. She'll get over it, Cormac said. I'll explain. You're home? Aiden asked, leveling a skeptical gaze back on Cormac. For how long? I don't know yet. We had a slight issue yesterday. We needed a place to lie low.
Oh, well then,
Aiden said, and he did nothing to suppress the sarcasm in his voice.
If you needed something from us, then by all means, brother.
And what's that supposed to mean? Cormac asked.
It's only that we haven't heard from you in 50 years,
Aiden said, his body language getting tight. And then you waltz in here with a Podrick.
Halfling, Cormac said.
Whatever. Mum and Da would be rolling over in their graves.
You don't even know Megan, Cormac said.
What's to know? Declan asked. For one, she killed the Black Castle who'd been working the North Shore. Declan and Aiden flinched.
That's right, Cormac said, feeling a flicker of pride despite the more overpowering irritation that it should have been him who'd made the kill.
His brother's reaction said they knew it should have been him, too.
How do you feel about that?
Aiden asked. Before he could answer, Declan jumped in.
That Colleen can't be 100 pounds soaking wet.
Cormac let himself smile, grateful for an excuse to avoid Aiden's question.
Actually, she's more than 100 pounds, even dry. But I get your point. She had the element of surprise in her favour.
I don't doubt that, Aiden said.
Who would suspect her?
Fine, Declan said.
I'll reserve judgment.
But we're still pissed at you. Not a word, Cormac. Not one fucking word from you in half a century.
How could Cormac explain? I know how you feel about me.
Oh, aye? And how's that, brother? Declan asked, crossing his arms.
I failed you both 3 times.
Declan snorted, but Cormac pressed on.
I couldn't come back until I avenged them. I couldn't look you in the eye until there were 3 of theirs lying dead at my feet. Aiden and Declan looked at him with what Cormac thought might be pity, and it made him clench his teeth. Don't look at me like that. Fine, Declan said, and his fist landed squarely against Cormac's jaw. Cormac staggered back, hitting a floor lamp and sending it toppling to the ground.
What the fuck?
Maybe we can pound some sense into you, Declan said, and he landed another blow right in the gut. This time Cormac was ready for him. He put his hands on Declan's shoulders and pushed him backward all the way across the room until his back slammed up against the wall and his glasses flew off his face. Cormac was surprised at the lack of resistance. Declan had size, but not as much strength as he'd assumed. Declan's legs gave way and he sank to the floor. Cormac looked down at him in horror. What had he done? A loud, angry roar erupted from Aiden. He put his head down and charged at Cormac, sending them both staggering across the sitting room and crashing onto the coffee table, which splintered beneath them, sending a half dozen magazines flying. Cormac scrambled to his feet, hands up in surrender. Aiden threw a punch to the gut.
Oof,
Cormac said, doubling over. Apparently Aiden still thought there was a point to be made. Cormac dodged the next blow, then swiped Aiden's leg. Aiden went down with a thud, then grabbed Cormac's ankle and bit him right behind the knee.
Are you fucking insane?
Cormac roared, kicking himself free. Aiden got to his feet, but kept himself in a wrestler's crouch, knees bent, arms out, ready for anything.
I needed you,
Aiden said with a huff of air.
We needed you, and you were nowhere to be found.
Aiden's fist jabbed out, landing a blow to Cormac's nose. There was a sick, crunching sound, and blood gushed from his nostrils, soaking his t-shirt. Cormac threw the next punch, which Aiden dodged, but Cormac followed it with an uppercut to the solar plexus.
Sorry I wasn't here to wipe your noses, little brother, but I was busy hunting a killer.
With another sharp jab, Aiden tagged his jaw.
Jesus, Aiden, enough with the face!
You were no help to me, Aiden repeated, and his words hurt more than the broken nose. Pissed, Cormac lunged for Aiden again, pushing him up against the wall.
Did you even know Declan was hospitalized?
Aiden asked. Cormac's gaze darted to Declan, who still sat slumped against the wall.
Fuck,
Declan muttered, his voice sounding weak.
Keep me out of this.
While Cormac was distracted by this news, Aiden sucker punched him in the kidney. Cormac put his hand to the side of Aiden's head and slung him away from the wall and into the room. Aiden's hip caught the edge of the TV and he only righted it just before it fell off its stand.
Watch it!
Declan cried, suddenly finding some strength.
The Vikes play the Packers at noon!
Aiden shifted to the side, just as Cormac rushed him, catching him around the throat and holding him against the opposite wall.
Fine,
Aiden said, holding his hands up.
Truce?
I don't know, Cormac said sarcastically, ignoring how badly his nose throbbed.
Ye started this.
Then, truce. Cormac gave Aiden a final shove against the wall, then released him. There was nothing more to do or say. It was done. They'd either move on from here, or they wouldn't. Declan muttered under his breath, something about them both being a pair of crazy nutters. Aiden straightened his shirt. Declan found his glasses, demolished under the coffee table, and put them on his face. They sat crookedly over his nose.
You'll be replacing these, he said.
They couldn't glamour glasses like they could clothing.
Whatever,
Cormac responded, holding the end of his t-shirt to his nose.
But now tell me why you were in the hospital.
He knew his brother hadn't meant the human one.
It's no big deal, Declan grumbled.
Oh, of course not, Aiden said sarcastically, and Cormac got the distinct impression this had been an ongoing argument between them.
It's no big deal that you're an addict,
Declan corrected him.
Recovering addict.
What? Cormac asked. Aiden turned toward him.
You're not the only one who's had to deal with our parents' death and Madigan's.
Declan, Cormac said, getting down on one knee in front of him. Declan looked away, so Aiden continued to explain. Every month for the last 2 years, Doc O'Shea's been sending one of his nurses to our house to give Declan an injection that helps him deal with the withdrawal. And who knows how many pills?
4,
Declan muttered, and then the corners of his mouth twitched upward. Aidan threw up his hands.
4. 4 kinds of pills to tide him over until the nurse comes again. 1 for nausea, 1 for headaches, 1 for sleeplessness, 1 for...
He glanced down at Declan for a reminder. Declan shrugged. I can't remember what the 4th one does either.
So, you're handling it,
Cormac said, addressing Aidan. Then he turned to Declan.
And taking care of yourself?
That's a good thing, then. Cormac looked back up at Aidan and gave him what he hoped would be a look of confidence, though something about Aidan's demeanor said he didn't need his big brother's vote of approval anymore. He didn't even necessarily want it.
Enough.
Declan pushed up to his feet. Declan, if you're hungry, Aidan said. I just cooked 2 pounds of bacon when our brother's little Anamkara came skipping into the room.
Maybe later.
Wait, Cormac said. Are we good?
For now,
Aidan said. Then he tipped his head and looked up at the ceiling. But I think you got another battle waiting for you upstairs. Cormac followed his gaze and his jaw got tight.
Right, he said. Shit.
Chapter 22. Cormac. When Cormac got upstairs, he found Megan standing, now dressed, at his open bedroom window. She stared outside with her hands spread wide against the sill, probably trying to make sense of where they were. The one bad thing about tilting, there wasn't much opportunity for taking in the sights. Now there was nothing to be seen but autumnal trees, trees, and more trees. No sign of the Great Lake anymore. It had to be disorienting for her. One more thing to apologize for. She whirled at the sound of him entering the room, then gasped when she saw that his shirt was soaked with blood.
They fought you 2-on-1?
She asked, sounding both disbelieving and indignant on his behalf. He shrugged and his shirt disappeared. He replaced it with a new one.
They took turns.
Her mouth twisted.
Well, that was kind of them.
Now it's your turn, he said, because they might as well get this over with. He hadn't intended to mislead her about his middle brother's being dead, but obviously he had. Her reaction downstairs had made that clear enough.
I never agreed to this mate business, she said, which caught him off guard.
He narrowed his eyes in confusion. That wasn't what he expected to be talking about.
You don't have much choice in that.
Oh, I don't? She asked, both her voice and temper rising.
Is that right? You're just going to, what, chain me to your bed?
By Danu, she was beautiful when pissed, and he had to admit, her suggestion had its appeal, but it wasn't his style. He continued, walking closer. You have a choice in whether you sleep with me, but no one can change the fact that you are my Anamkara. Believe me, when I first met you, I found that fact very inconvenient. I would have changed it then, if I could.
Oh, so now you don't want me. What's it going to be, handsome?
Cormac turned his head and smiled at the ridiculousness of their conversation.
I didn't say that. If you'd let me finish, I would have said that now I wouldn't have it any other way.
Don't you remember last night at all? Her eyes flashed, then warned. She remembered. So did his hound, which was already prowling just at the sight of her in his bedroom. She turned her back, as if that could erase it all.
I can't be with someone who isn't honest with me. I have a lot to process right now. Things are confusing enough without having to deal with lies.
I didn't lie. She whirled around with her arms out and yelled,
You said your family was dead! You said you were alone!
I said the Black Castle destroyed my family. They may have only killed 3, but our family is not the same. It never will be, and I have been alone for a very long time.
By choice!
She was yelling even louder now. Your brothers are alive! She makes an excellent point, dickwad, Declan yelled up the stairwell. If you don't want us all to fall in love with her, you might want to close your door. Cormac glanced behind him toward the hallway and muttered to himself, Right now, I wouldn't mind killing them both. Then he looked over his shoulder at Megan. Would that make you happy? It wouldn't, she said, and he could hear the worst of her anger slip away. He got to the door, slammed it shut, then turned to her in contrition. I didn't intend to mislead you, and I'm sorry that I did. Well, I'm glad your brothers are alive, for your sake as well as theirs. What I don't understand is why you've been gone so long and without any contact with them. They've clearly missed you. He arched one eyebrow at her. You did see my shirt, right? If they missed me, they sure have a funny way of showing it. Megan frowned, unwilling to make light of the situation. He supposed that was right, so he got serious too. Despite what they said downstairs, he explained, it was for the best that I left. You have to trust me on that. She groaned in exasperation. How? How is not seeing your brothers for the best? You wouldn't You better believe I wouldn't understand. She slapped her hands against his shoulders and pushed. He didn't move, at least on the outside. Internally, everything moved at the feel of her touch. He wrapped his hands around hers and moved them to his chest. She bowed her head and rested it against him. You know, you're not the only one who's lost someone, Cormac McConnell. Do you know how many people would kill to have a family? Any family. And you just throw yours away? He kissed the top of her head. You don't know what you're talking about. I didn't throw them away. I have no parents, no siblings, no real family, not even the crappy one I thought I had. None at all. I'm fucking alone, Cormac. She looked up at him, and there were tears in her eyes. I would give anything, anything, to have what you have, but you're too stupid to... She shook her head and yanked her hands away. Take me back to the lake. What? Take me back to the lake. I can hitch a ride from there, or if I strike out, at least I can follow the shore all the way up to Canada. I'm not going to do that. How long would it take before she was back in the Black Castle's clutches, or fall prey to another group of Lannon Shi? What would they do if they discovered she was one of them, if only just by half? Then I'll ask one of your brothers to take me. I bet they'd be glad to get rid of me. They'd probably prefer a family reunion without a stranger here. So, yeah, I won't need your help, and I don't need your protection. Obviously, I've proven that I can take care of myself. At that memory, Cormac's temper flared. He'd never felt as emasculated as he did in that moment when he sat chained while his woman took out the man he'd made it his mission to kill. And I sure as hell am not going to be your anim... whatever. Kara. Whatever. She walked toward the wardrobe where she'd kicked off her shoes the night before and got down on the floor to pull them on. Why should I waste any more time on someone who would throw away the most precious thing in the world? You've got to be the biggest idiot in the history of mankind. Scratch that. Your kind. Makushla. Don't you Makushla me. She glanced up at him, and it killed him to see the thick sheen of tears still glazing her eyes. She didn't really want to go. She was just pissed. He understood that. If you can throw your own brothers away, why should I expect any better treatment? He didn't know how to answer that. Maybe she should expect better because the thought of being away from her felt like his guts were being torn apart. Or maybe because the thought of being without her nearly brought him to his knees. Nothing to say? She asked. His jaw got tight. You can't go. I can. She got up and wiped her hands down the sides of her thighs. Her body was only inches from his. All he'd have to do was lean forward and her breasts would be flush against his chest. If you go, Megan, I swear to Danu, I'll follow. She shrugged and sniffed, as if his oath meant nothing.